Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
So first, a big congrats for great seasons to our coaches here, John Mayer at LMU and Andrew Fuller at Stanford. Both you guys, it was the best season in program history, and you both made it to the NCAA Championship Tournament. John, you got your team finished third. Andrew, you were named ABCA Coach of the Year. I mean, just the accolades are piling in. Other than this podcast, what do you guys feel contributed to your success this year?
Nothing else. That's it.
That's it.
I don't know. I think everything kind of comes together in different ways and for different programs. So I'm sure it's very different for John. Just different rosters. I don't know. John, can you point to anything for you?
Well, I first wanted to congratulate you on Coach of the Year. Pretty big deal.
I want to congratulate you on a...
No, I mean, I was mainly just bummed the committee didn't let you guys be in the tournament. We didn't see you guys there at all. Did they not select you? Were you guys?
Wow.
Were you guys there?
We were there briefly.
You were... Oh, my gosh. I missed... Oh, geez. No, I'm just kidding. What a year Stanford had. It was pretty cool. For us... I'd say our strengths, we were pretty experienced. I think actually different than Stanford, where Andrew's team was really young, a lot of freshmen. Their future is bright. We had a lot of seniors. We had five graduate seniors, so their fifth year. And I think between the five of them, they had something like 500 wins in college beach volleyball. So that's a lot to lean on. So that was a big deal. I think only one member of our team had ever been to Gulf Shores of our 15 players. And I think the whole team was just on a mission to do something that had never been done before at LMU. And they really identified it early, and they were set on making it happen, especially, you know, those five seniors lost their previous senior year due to COVID. I think that was some of our strengths. I mean, Billy, you mentioned the podcast. The podcast has actually been a huge benefit to LMU volleyball. We had Bernie Holiday, who's on the Mount Everest of Coach Your Brains Out guests. He was with us all season, and he was with us there in Gulf Shores helping us. And we also had Joe Trinsey, another Mount Everest member of the podcast. He was there helping us, and to have those two and have that staff with me was huge.
So how did a Bernie Holiday contribute? Like, what's his involvement at a tournament or throughout the season?
Yeah, I mean, immensely. Throughout the season, you know, we met with him over Zoom, and you know, just whatever was going on that week, he had helpful tools, good ideas for how we can take on the mental game. While we were there, he talked about, he took us through some visualization. He met with all the teams and kind of reconnected with their values. And I mean, there's obviously lots of nerves going into a tournament like that, especially with how new it was for us. So he helped us kind of work through all those different details. So, I mean, he was huge for us.
John, do you have an example that you can give us specifically about like a player or something that he worked on with you specifically, or one of the players?
I mean, one of his messages to the team was that this is it's not a big weekend. It's just different. And he had them all just acknowledge what's different about it. Instead of just ignoring like all the hoopla, he, all right, everyone, you know, tell me what's different that's going on this week compared to our last, you know, tournaments, ESPN media, you know, we have finals this week, you know, all these things that felt different. Everyone's talking about it, social media presence, just all this stuff. So they just got it out in the air, and then he said, okay, so we acknowledge all this stuff that's different, and then we get into like, how do we want to compete? Who do we want to be when we step on the court? So I thought that was really useful, really helpful. Again, instead of ignoring it, just acknowledging it and taking it on.
Andrew, what about you? I mean, kind of the first question I had was if there was anything different that you guys did that helped you be successful this year as opposed to years past. John, it sounds like those two pieces were huge. What about you, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you can overlook the talent level arising in our program. We had in our lineup, we had four Frosh competing at the top four flights, and they were pretty darn good. We had really good senior leadership this year. We were probably the only team that didn't train in the fall as a group. So everyone was at home. And I don't really know what they were doing on a daily basis because we weren't allowed to know. And so there were a lot of just kind of like, what does the next day hold? Like we couldn't even really plan that much this year because we didn't know what we were going to be allowed to do. We were in the most restrictive county in the United States, in Santa Clara County. And so there wasn't a lot of like long-term planning or goal setting because it was just like getting to the next day. It's like, what does next week look like? Are we going to be COVID free? Are we going to, you know, have everyone on the roster? Are we going to get shut down? And so there was like a very, very short focus in front of us. And it was just like really taking off bite-sized pieces of the season, which I think ended up being really beneficial. And it, you know, it, like in hindsight, was a really great lesson to have, including, I think you could really tell with our team this year that there was a deep sense of gratitude just to get to compete any time we did, because there was so much uncertainty for the roster. And I think when you approach it that way, just like, I'm stoked that I get a chance to compete today with my teammates. I think that's a pretty awesome recipe to have.
Cool. And I know, both of you guys were excited about implementing a more ecological approach, into training this year. I guess, how are your practices different? How did that go? Did you go full board? I know, John, you kind of jumped head in. Andrew, were you more balanced? I guess, how were your practices different this year with the motor learning side?
Yeah, again, John, I'll go first. Another influence from the podcast, we had obviously Casey Kreider, who helped introduce it, Harjeev Singh, Andy Bass, and many more. So heavily influenced by the ecological approach. I don't know if I'm doing it correctly, but I was attempting to be more ecological. Things we did, we spent less time focusing on how to move and something like your approach, and more time on how to get kills. less time on how to form your platform the right way, and more time just trying to pass the ball to a spot where your setter could set you. So just that more external focus was everywhere. And I think it led
John,
to us trying
can
to-
I- Yep. Can I dive in? Because I'm curious. You're being very broad, which is great, but I'm always curious as to like how or what does that implementation actually look like? So the example that comes to mind is, I know one of the big things we've talked about in the podcast in the past is this idea of being slow to fast and why that's so important and how that essentially is a foundational thing for an approach and how challenging it can be to do that. I remember long ago, Billy, you talked about doing that in your own career after playing volleyball for however many years you've been playing. You were still working on that specific thing. And when you did it well, you got better. So when you're saying we worked on how to get kills, does that apply? Is there any conversation around slow to fast experiment? Like, what does that process actually sound like? And I know it's probably different with each player, but I'm just curious as to, can you get more specific when you say how to get kills? What kind of things are you saying to your players?
Yeah, I mean, especially with the ecological, it is much more individual. I tried not to have a ideal movement idea in my mind of like, they have to do this to get kills. So I tried not, I mean, obviously I'm influenced by all my background and the, you know, the keys like slow to fast. So I'm sure that was in there, but I was just trying to observe, are they getting kills? If not, maybe what's limiting them. So instead of guiding them towards, you have to do it this way, I would try to eliminate something that wasn't working. To give you a practical example, I mean, ways that we worked on attacking. We just do it sometimes with a speed gun. You know, whoever can get the high speed kill, anytime you get a kill and it's high speed, you get a point. Or if it's in the 30s, you get 3 points, in the 40s, you get four, and it's gotta be a kill.
John, we tried to do some speed gun stuff. I think I told you about it. We borrowed like a $1,000 speed gun from the baseball team, and we didn't even hit fast enough to register anything on it.
Yeah. The one we have is a little inaccurate, but you get the idea. And mainly it's just, it nudges them to want to generate power and hit with range, and they're trying to get kills.
And so when you guys are using the speed gun, you're not giving them a process on how to hit harder. You're just telling them this is your number.
No, especially initially, you know, just, yeah, give, that's the feedback that, yeah, knowledge of the result. You hit it 44 and it was a kill. And then if they're, you know, struggling with the problem, we weren't going to give them a solution necessarily right away. But if they seem to get stuck, then maybe, maybe we'd try to throw out, you know, we're going to have Nick Winkelman coming on the podcast soon, who's really good with analogies. What if you were more like a rocket exploding to the sky when you attacked it? You know, what if you go explore that? What if you tried having your string a little bit longer, basically lengthening your approach? So we wouldn't just like completely let them drown. We'd throw out suggestions, but it wasn't like, this is the only way you can do it. And let's stay on that path. And that's, you know, it wasn't like all the feedback was on staying on that approach path. It was more, yeah, you hit that with range. You're able to score there. So just identifying when they could do it. And we had all sorts of attacking things. We did one we called Lemonade, where the setter had to set it inaccurately. So if they set their hitter in rhythm, you could only wash the point. If they set it, you know, like too low, too high, inside, outside, they could get a point. If it was like a really bad set, they could get 2 points. So we just tried to make lemonade out of lemons. And I think if you're trying to adjust the sets, then you're probably going to use some functional approach movement. So I think that, yeah, there's lots of different ways to do it without saying this is how you have to do it.
Did you get any resistance from your players? Like, did you set up the fact that you were going to go toward more of an ecological philosophy with your players? Did you just start doing it and see how it goes? Like, what was the reaction from the players as you did this?
Yeah, I tried to, I knew it was going to be a big transition, and my assistant coaches really pushed me to explain it because I was just so fired up on it. I was just, let's go. But I tried to explain it as well as I could and thought I did. And then after a couple of weeks of getting feedback from them, I clearly hadn't. So it was a constant thing. I'd say it wasn't until, and I think having success helped, but as we got into the year, you started to get a sense that they appreciated it. Like, they were starting to see some of the benefits. I think there's a lot of skepticism, a lot of yearning for how we used to do it. I think it feels good when the coach is giving you answers. And if it's an, yeah. So I think, and a lot of people like this, like, kind of clear path towards, you know, once I do this step, once I go slow to fast, and then I go small, bigger, biggest, then I've mastered it. So I think that's a nice framework. And so I think they missed that, and it was a challenge to make the transition. And I think we still have a lot of work to do on it, but success helps, I guess. That was our best weapon.
Nice, Andrew. Can you give us some insights into your practices? Anything different this year?
Yeah, a lot of the same stuff that John was discussing, and we almost benefited from, you know, in the fall for our 3-month training block in the fall, when so we didn't watch them play any volleyball. We just talked about it, and we actually had many opportunities to talk about sort of the transition from more prescriptive coaching to more, you know, offering, creating some problems for them to solve. And so when we got into our 3-week preseason at the beginning of February, we had talked about it enough, and it was, in a strange way, beneficial to have such a short preseason, because we didn't have a long preseason to like restructure any mechanics or, you know, teach them the way of, you know, maybe what we would have done in the past. And we talked to this group of frosh that we had at the end of the year briefly about how, by most measures, they had a very successful first year in College Beach. And I was just curious, like, is there anything that we did to help you do that? Or could you have been even better? You know, did we hinder you at all? And one of our players commented that they felt like they were celebrated as individuals, and that we didn't try and put them all into the same box as players. And they all came in such unique manners of how they play. And I think the new approach, the more ecological approach, is super helpful in helping them just be that their best as an individual in the way that they play. And so, you know, we would give feedback of like, hey, I noticed that like you hit this zone of the court far more frequently than this zone of the court. Let's explore that and see how we can open up a little bit more range for you. But I also think that the new approach has been really good for resilience in competition, because when you, if you go through a more prescriptive loop and it's like, I do XYZ with my platform equals I'm a good passer, but that's not how the game is played. And there are going to be times when like you need to be okay with like just putting an arm out there and hoping that it goes to the right spot. And if you just don't have any sort of emphasis on that in practice of like doing it quote unquote the right way, then they're going to be a lot more flexible with what's working in the moment, especially in a sport like beach volleyball, where like the wind was pretty chaotic in Gulf Shores. And, you know, you deal with that all season in different environments. And so just not having any sort of focus on this sort of like binary approach of how to do things, especially for players who are going through college and the academic experience, where oftentimes in college or in an academic setting, you put in X amount of work and you get X result. And you just kind of check boxes, you do the assignments, you do the work, and you're going to get the A that you want. Or, you know, if you put in C effort, you're going to get a C. But in sports, you can put in A plus effort all the time and not get the result you want. And so I think that the different approach of ecological just supports the sort of entropy that you have in sport and makes for more resilient players.
Coach of the year. Look at that. Well done. Well said.
I'm wondering, as you go to the ecological approach, and John, it'll be an interesting juxtaposition with you having more experienced players and then Fuller with you having newer players, what kind of different kinds of conversations you had to have with the players about the psychology that they were dealing with?
Yeah, I can go first. I mean, we just talked about the benefits, how, you know, there wouldn't be in the match, we wouldn't be able to give them solutions. And that's why we wanted to let them problem solve in practice. And we wanted to put them in challenging situations so they could learn how to problem solve and build that muscle. Something they identified in some of our like post-game debriefs, I remember early on in the season, and it was feedback for me that what we were doing was working, was like one of our seniors said, you know, I think something that makes us a really good team is when we switch sides, our coaches don't even really talk to us. Like we either talk to our partner or, you know, we're on it. Where like the teams we play, we see the coaches talking to them, you know, for 30 seconds, holding their hand as they walk, and they really have to, you know, rely on them. So you just feel this sense of like, you know, self-efficacy, this sense of you know, leadership, of just being capable of doing whatever they wanted to do. So yeah, that to me just showed like the mental side, all the benefits of it.
As you move to a more ecological idea framework, I would imagine that in some ways, since it's not something the players are used to, that you'd be having to have different conversations around what confidence looks like, how it feels in this new philosophy. Like sounds like John talked about the benefits of it, but I would just imagine that confidence, you have to have a certain level of confidence or to thrive in an ecological, a more ecological environment. Maybe especially with you having younger players, if you did that, I would imagine that there's a possibility that you would have to have conversations around that to get them to that minimum level of confidence so that they could thrive.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's a little simple in my mind, but I love the definition of confidence is credible self-talk. And you build credibility with yourself by doing a lot of hard stuff in your life. And so we talk to our student athletes like, you guys have done a lot of hard stuff in your life leading up to this point, and you're going to continue to do difficult things at practice. So you can be confident. Like, and you doesn't mean that you know, like you get the result you want, but you're there to, and this, I did learn a new idea quote during our last week of practice. And that was, attack the game and it will protect you. And I love that so much because in my mind, the way that I, understand that quote is that when you attack the game, then you will have no regrets and you'll sleep well at night. And so often the result is out of our hands in sport, but you can confidently attack the game in the best of your ability. And then you're going to walk away from it being really fulfilled and satisfied no matter what happened. And I think that goes hand in hand with confidence.
Nils, I don't know if this answers it, but this is what came to my brain was we had CC Kraft on the podcast, who's a mental skills coach. She's awesome. But she talked about this idea of junk food confidence. And I think when I watch a lot of volleyball coaches and beach volleyball coaches, they create this junk food confidence by, you know, popping in serves, by initiating an easy ball, by having no defense on the other side. And, you know, the players and the coaches all feel good about themselves because they're bouncing balls and they look really good. But I think it's really shallow because as soon as they step on the court, the other team's trying to bring out their weaknesses and they're serving really tough and they're blocking them and all that stuff. So we talk about, you know, confidence doesn't come from feeling good or getting easy reps. Confidence comes from being challenged and taking on hard problems and doing them yourself versus having a coach, you know, walk you through it. So yeah, I think that's, again, a benefit of the ecological approach, doing things in a representative game-like way.
Lauren, our assistant coach and slash my wife, at the beginning of the season, she came up with a list of warm-up rules. You know, one, you just need to literally get warm physically. The second one is you don't have to feel good at the end of warmups. Like you don't have to feel like you've hit the perfect cut or hit the perfect high line. Like you just need to kind of get your hand on the ball and know that you don't have to have accomplished everything you want in warmups in order to play well. So I think that might be in a parallel lane with John.
Was there anything you knew you guys tried to implement this season that wasn't successful?
I pretty much nailed it. Perfect season. First time. I feel like everything I do, there's lots of flaws. I guess a lot of it, you just don't realize it, right? You don't know, you don't know. And that's why it's helpful to get feedback from them, from the players who are in it. A couple things that jump out. I think initially just not explaining the why of an activity, like putting them in a challenging situation and just like, all right, I'm not going to help them. You know, like they'll just go figure it out and they'll be anti-fragile because they're going to do it without me explaining anything. But I think you can explain like why, you know, the benefits of whatever activity it is. And then, you know, then just let them experience it and try to figure it out. So I think that goes a long way. I talked about it, I think, before. I just, you know, learned about this idea of self-organize and just kind of expected, again, I'd throw them into an activity and watch them magically self-organize to a solution. And I could stand in the corner and just think I was a genius, but clearly it didn't work that way. You know, it's a relationship. You still want to be caring and very involved in kind of guiding them and helping them explore towards self-organizing or towards a solution that could be effective. There's probably 100 more, but those are two.
We made plenty of mistakes this year. I mean, we made mistakes with partnerships. We made mistakes with strategy. And I think the more accepting you are that many mistakes will be made in sport, then the less daunting mistakes are, and they're just little moments to reflect and get a little bit better. So yeah, I think just our connotation of mistakes is that like it's part of the deal. It's fine.
Mm-hmm. Other than COVID, what was the biggest struggle or a challenge you guys faced this season? And I guess, can you just take us into it a little bit, a little glimpse behind the curtain?
Hard to get past COVID. That was,
you can talk about that too, because I'm sure there's something to learn. I'm just thinking like for hopefully coaches in the future aren't going to be dealing with that, yeah. But maybe they are.
That'd be nice. I don't know if it was a mistake, but just the challenge of taking someone out of the lineup. I think all coaches deal with playing time and making changes. We made a change with one of our players at about the midway point. And it was partially, there's some COVID. She had had to sit out a couple of weeks and came back and struggled. And so it's just a challenging situation. I think we did a pretty good job, better than I've done in the past, but as we're getting feedback, I could have been better. So just, again, just the more you can communicate directly with everybody involved, you know, each person, the person who's getting pulled out of the lineup, their old partner, the new person coming in, and then not, you know, one time is probably not enough. You got to follow up again the next day and then the next day, and just continue to, you know, try to explain why we're doing what we're doing, and then try to clarify their new role. I don't think I did that as well. So once they had a new role of not maybe being a starter, like, okay, here's how you can A, get back in the lineup, and B, how you can, you know, play your role at the highest level you can. Cause you know, it's about our team. It's about all of us. And so, yeah, I guess that was one kind of hiccup we ran into, and we tried, but it's always hard to make changes and take people out of a lineup.
I think that's one of the single largest ongoing challenges as a coach, that like, you're never going to be at your best at that skill of transparency, of explaining why you are where you are and what your role is. And because it very often is the case that when someone is asking about that, it means they're not satisfied. And something that I really want to improve on is explaining the concept that individual improvement will not always equate to getting the partner that you want at the flight that you want and the circumstances that you want. But it is important to equate individual improvement with the improvement of the team. But then another part of that is that while you are individually improving, so is everyone around you, ideally. And so helping, just being better as a coach at explaining that idea, which is a hard pill to swallow oftentimes, is having, you know, competitive people around who naturally are not satisfied with their role and want more and more. And that kind of goes in the same bucket as the idea that what's best for the team may not be what's best for you. And then at the same time, what's best for you probably is what's best for the team. And that, I think, is just a hard thing to wrestle with.
Something I've tried to do, kind of building off that, Andrew, is because when these situations come up, you, like, as a coach, you just want everything to fall into line. Like, each person accepts their role. You know, yeah, okay, I'm not in the lineup, that's fine, I'll work hard in practice. Like, that's the dream, right?
Right.
And then when there's pushback, you're like, oh, why are they doing this? You know, it's making this hard. Like, but I think as I've gotten better, I've tried to really acknowledge, like, hey, this is really cool that you still want to be in the lineup. Like, you're really competitive. Like, I love that you're still fighting for this, and we want to help you get there. And I guess just acknowledging, like, what they're feeling and trying to reframe it in your own mind and recognize that, like, this is what you want in your athletes. Yeah, I just found that helped a lot versus, like, just seeing it as a nuisance and,
right,
and making things harder.
And I, one thing that we learned from a speaker during COVID was, in times of crisis, because this is, I think we're still in kind of crisis mode, even though it feels better than the beginning of COVID, is like just over communicating and like over caring for your players. And I'm not saying that we did that. We want to keep over caring for them. And I would say that I had more conversations with parents of our players than I ever have, as the head coach. And, I don't know. I like to think that that's been good to just show the love.
Yeah.
I thought you would get to escape parents when you coach at the college level, but I guess not. So you guys both your teams were in the NCAA tournament for the first time.
Andrew was there.
Oh my goodness. What was your preparation like for the event? And I guess, what did the conversations with the team sound like? I know, John, you touched on this with Bernie Holiday. Andrew, how did you guys approach the tournament?
pretty similarly to the other tournaments that we've been prepping for. Pac-12 Champs is the week before, and it's modeled after NCAAs, so the format's really similar, which I'm thankful for. And
that was a big one for you guys just to qualify, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a gnarly tournament. You have a lot of good teams in the Pac-12, and we had to beat Cal twice. Cal was really good this year. We had to beat Arizona State, who was really good as well. And yeah, it was so, you know, just in terms of scouting, you know, we divvied up the work pretty similarly to how we had done it. And video sharing has just gotten so much better over the years. So getting access to film on opponents is quite a bit simpler. I don't know. We just kind of felt like, well, you know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel for another weekend. Like what John was saying, it's different, but it's not necessarily like bigger. It's just a different environment.
And your players didn't seem any more excited. They were just kind of like another tournament.
I think they were excited, but I don't think that they were like phased by the moment. Mm-hmm. Like it's just exciting. Like it is like, and you don't want to like squash that. Like you don't want to like, Hey, calm down. Like, it's just, you know, like you want them to feel that joy and experience it. And cause it's such a great moment for them. But they were there to play and they showed up.
Cool. John, anything else you want to add on, I guess, leading up to your first NCAA tournament?
I kind of hit on some of it. We always do this values kind of exercise and all the teams create their personal values. And then as a team, you know, what's important to them, things like, you know, industriousness or focus or poise, or each team has their unique values. And we really hit on it the first probably third of the year. And then some teams stay with it, and you know, it's more just you live it than talk about it, right? But we really tried to reconnect with them going into the tournament, getting clear on, you know, who they want to be, not focusing on what they're going to get. You know, there's all the talk about the trophies and all that stuff. And it was just, we wanted to be locked in on who we could be. And they all said if they felt like they could be themselves, then, you know, it'd be a success. And I think that just got them more locked in on the controllables and more another CC craft line, more on their 3-foot circle, like just kind of, it's me, you know, and I'm going to live my values, and me and my partner, we're going to live our values.
So I'm curious, what did the conversations immediately after the tournament sound like with your teams?
I think it's just like, I love you guys. Hell of a ride. I don't know. It wasn't the time to, you know, dig into what had transpired, just enjoying the moment together. Like, that team will never be the same, trying to enjoy the seniors who aren't coming back. And, you know, we'll have time for reflection a little bit later, but generally speaking, I don't do like a really deep dive after our teams. If they want to talk a little bit about their match, great. But we maybe do 5 minutes tops, and then we're on to the next thing. And we'll have more time. We do at the end of the season and throughout the year, we do an exercise called start, stop, continue. And we segment it into things that we want to start, stop, and continue doing in training, in terms of like off court team behavior, and then in terms of competition. And so in the coming weeks, we'll get a chance to do that and reflect a little bit more. So there's probably a whole bunch of stuff, like, you know, we mentioned mistakes that will come up in that meeting that I have totally overlooked at this point. So look forward to that.
For us, for the end of the tournament, we, you know, different from Andrew, where Andrew, they're still in, I think they're in quarters. So they go back and they get to see each other. That was our last time maybe that group will ever be together. So not that we, you know, we're going to spend a ton of time, but we met as a group and just kind of, we're all in a circle and just, does anybody have anything they want to say? And it was quiet, probably. And a lot of them were crying. It was quiet for a little bit. And then almost everybody said something, and really just from the heart and emotional, and just a lot of gratitude and thankfulness towards each other. I think there wasn't a sense of like, I mean, they're disappointed that they lost, But my sense was it was more sadness that it was done, like they didn't get to compete together anymore. And, you know, we talked, you know, teams are special and it's a unique thing in life. So just the sadness if we don't get to do it anymore. It was really cool. Like some girls who maybe don't often kind of show their vulnerable side really broke down and just shared what they were feeling. And it was a special moment. And got to, I know Billy doesn't always love talking with the parents, but a lot of the parents came up and just got to talk about, you know, I had three seniors who had been with me since my first year. This was their fifth year with me. And they really kind of helped build the program and just kind of reminiscing on where we got to from when they started. So yeah, it was a nice, nice experience.
So in that conversation, when there's that silence for a while, do you Peter Haberl it and just keep it going until somebody finally breaks down and talks, or?
Yeah. Yeah. He's my idol. Yeah. No, I'm pretty good at not talking, so it's easy. Yeah. I'll just sit there. Yeah. I definitely don't want to get in the way. And we do it. It's like that almost every time, even after a win. Hey, what did we learn? And it'll be quiet for a little while. And even it feels like, you know, it's probably 3 seconds, but it feels like 30, but it's really worthwhile to let that space stay open so they can communicate what they learned.
I think we tend to do, you know, obviously the end of the season is a kind of a grander moment, but we do that more on an individual team basis with the coach that was on the court, because oftentimes we bring it in the team huddle and I may have no idea how team X played because I wasn't on their court. So I don't feel like it is necessarily reasonable for me to make a sweeping statement about how the whole team performed and what they need to work on, because maybe the fives totally balled out and the twos didn't, and in certain areas. So we try to do that on more of an individual basis, with each just being, you know, these little platoons instead of, you know, the whole unit operating on the same court in the same way.
All right. Off the top of your head, off the cuff, each of you do start, stop, continue as a coach.
To ourselves?
Yes.
Oh, geez.
John, you can go first.
I'd say start kind of fighting for your program more from like an administrative level, like, you know, go battle for a locker room, for courts, for scholarships, all the stuff that, you know, we want to have in our program. Continue evaluating and evolving and learning and considering what you're doing and just knowing that what we're doing isn't optimal. We could always do better. Stop listening to Fuller. No, what is it? I don't know if I have. I'd have to think on that one more. It's hard to know where your big holes are. Yeah, I don't know. Andrew, what do you got?
I think the start column, I usually look to others for, because I think I don't know what the starts are because I'm not aware of them. Like if I was aware of them, I think I may have already started. Stops, I think, would be, you know, like the continuing challenge of giving false praise or empty praise, or stop doing things that aren't purposeful. I think continue, you know, the expectation setting, the transparency, the over communicating. I think that's something that I continue to want to improve on. But I think the whole start column is something that I'm really eager to get from our players. We do end of the year surveys and conversations. And from our other coaches.
Just can I ask you, do you have your players fill out start, stop, or continue for other players at all? Maybe anonymously? Or do you think that would be a thing that would be beneficial?
No, we do the start, stop, continue as a group without the coaches in the room, so that it's coming from the group and then it's a little bit more anonymous, I guess. But then, you know, we also have an anonymous survey done through our athletic department where they can give feedback along a lot of different lines. But in terms of peer-to-peer, we really try and encourage an environment where they're pushed to communicate directly with each other if they think someone can improve. And we've created a nice culture within our program of, if two teams are playing each other, they'll play their match and then they give feedback of, hey, so-and-so, I was stopping this shot and trying to get you, you know, go into this zone of the court, or I was serving you this way. So that it just kind of like normalizes giving peer-to-peer feedback.
We do it. I mean, that's a great call by Andrew, the post activity. We do that a lot as well, but we'll have it with their partners where they'll do a start, stop, continue for each other. Probably every 3 weeks or so, trying to kind of nudge an uncomfortable conversation, and we push them to be, yeah, kind but honest.
We've grilled you guys a lot. Let's finish with two more. Were there any special moments or stories that stuck out for you this season?
There's a lot. I think that's what'll happen sometimes, that we go through a season. It's like everyone remembers the very end, you know, at least for us, like Gulf Shores, you know, not that we had expectations, but it went pretty well for us. But I think when you step back, like there's lots of moments throughout the year. For us, we didn't have a home facility, so we didn't have any home matches. And, you know, that's obviously unfortunate, especially with five seniors. So our WCC championships, thankfully, were in Dockweiler, which is really close to LMU, and it was on the beach. And they allowed people to come, at least kind of like, you know, as the beach on the outside of the courts. So a lot of the families, even some of our international families, were able to come. We were able to do a senior day. It was a little risky that I planned the senior day after the championship. So if we would have lost, it would have been maybe not so good. But we ended
up
winning it.
Move.
It was pretty bold. But it was really our only opportunity to do it. So, yeah, that was pretty neat. And the team who ended up clinching the WCC championship had some tough times as a team, and they'd started playing their best kind of that part of the year. So it's exciting to see them have a breakthrough. So yeah, I'd say that was cool, but I could go like kind of through each. I mean, it was fun to go up to Stanford and see Andrew's facility and get to compete there. Yeah, we just had a lot of good moments throughout the year.
I think, I had a definitely like a different sense of, those like end of set or end of match moments. You know, it's the last duel or the last flight playing, like when we're playing LMU, and just in the past, I think I'd get like so wound up with those moments, and just like, I think COVID really was such a perspective shifter, and it has allowed me to kind of like zoom out a little bit more on the bird's eye view, and just like watching, you know, our final flight playing against LMU in like such a tight one. And just like, wow, like this is so cool. Like what a moment for everyone experiencing this, that is so unforgettable, like win or lose. We were on both ends of moments like that. And that just like, that just went through like the whole year in so many different ways. Like when we saw our team for the first time in probably a year, you know, we just like sat down on the sand, and it was such a heavy moment to just see each other face to face. And then, you know, beating programs and teams that we had never beaten before, and just seeing kind of the joy for the players. And yeah, I don't know. I think just like the overall perspective shift was pretty meaningful this year.
Final quote from the coach of the year.
I've said it before. The word Ubuntu means I am because we are, and just the interconnectedness of things. Like, you know, I learned so much from you guys on the podcast, from the guests we've had. Like, nothing is ever accomplished in isolation. And to know that, I think, when you look at things that way, I think generally the world can be a little bit better place.
Thought for sure he was going to say, sign that contract extension, coach of the year, sign the 10-year deal, Coach Fuller. What a year. You know, with Andrew too, they, you know, they're really good, and they only lose two players, and he has some really good, another good class coming in. So I think Stanford's got a bright future with a good coach. It's going to be fun to see him.
You're a sweetheart, John.
We're all going to be hunting you. Yeah. You know, I get in my shots too. So I got to say something sweet here and there.
Well, thanks for letting us debrief with you guys. Congratulations again on great seasons. And yeah, we're looking forward to LMU Stanford final next year.
That would be sweet. One day.